Welcome to Day Zero Update for November 19th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Rippon.
And yeah, we've got a very quiet week. You can tell we're going into a holiday season here with Thanksgiving coming up in just a few days.
Yep.
Surprisingly, for somehow that happened. But yeah, not much happened this week. We got a Nintendo Indie World Showcase. They kind of came out of nowhere and maybe didn't really drop anything of earth-shaking, you know, stature in there, but some solid stuff there. But we got a bunch of layoff news as things continue to look bad for another, you know, number of companies here. We got the Game Awards nominees we'll go over and some of the weirdness that's happened there. As well as a Sony announcement that happened in the last couple of days here of a game that people have been wanting to be brought to the PS5. And then when it happened, people were very angry about it.
Yep.
For whatever reason, I don't know.
Because
they want new games from this developer and they're apparently not allowed to work on anything else while they're doing that. So, yeah, we'll get to that stuff in a bit, and as well as your subscription news on stuff coming to PlayStation Plus and Game Pass here over the next week or so. But before we do that, we'll start what we've been playing, and I'll be kicking off here. Been playing some Super Mario RPG. I've only put about 3 hours into this. This is the remake of the original game, though for all intents and purposes, it's pretty much exactly the same experience. They made some changes to make the battles less tedious. So when you time your little A button press to when you attack, if you do it really well, you'll get extra damage done to the other enemies. That helps streamline those battles a little bit and make them go a little bit faster. So you get a bonus out of that. And I think a lot of the... I think they've increased the number of, like, the chance of getting items back when you kill an enemy. I think that did not happen as much in the original. And I've only really put more time into the original game in the last couple of months on my Steam Deck. So I kind of have this first couple of hours kind of down pat for what the experience was, which in the Super Nintendo version, I did a lot of grinding in that early area. Because those fights were fairly tough early on as you try and deal with all that. And yeah, kind of remember doing that. And here I haven't had to do it so much. I've been more fighting enemies because it's more enjoyable and it's not like a huge pain in the butt. They do have control options for the battles. Because I believe in the original you hit, they have things mapped to A, B, X, and Y for your battle options, and I think you had to hit those buttons multiple times to confirm what you wanted to do. And here they kind of let you hit those buttons to pick a thing, and you can just hit A to confirm or B to go back. So you kind of have that, but you can also do it the original way. But yeah, I have beaten the second boss, which is a weird boss, because at a certain point they just put down A, B, or A, X, Y buttons on the ground, and he just randomly decides to take out buttons that you can't use in the battle system. And that sort of changes how you do it, though I've been getting by just fine just doing regular attacks most of the time. Occasionally use the specials when I want to get spicy, but
yeah,
for the most part it's not a super tough game. So yeah, that's been kind of that experience. The graphics are a nice improvement, but I still am not a huge fan of the like squat art style that everybody has. And but yeah, everything else looks better, it runs better. Still has these weird mini games that are kind of just not good, but they keep them here of like you're just gonna swim down this waterfall and you can hit the button to swim back up a bit because you're trying to collect coins as you go down. And you randomly go into these holes that take you through little like tunnel rivers where you occasionally get an extra item out of it from watching other enemies just messing around in there. I don't know. It's not a great minigame. It's just sitting here button mashing a bunch. And then there's when we're going down a river on these barrels and jumping to grab coins. And if you don't do it right when it's wants you to swap between barrels, you'll just hit the barrel and move to the other lane, which could be good or not. I don't know. It's not. You're just collecting coins. It's nothing really major. They let you replay it for some reason.
Yeah.
Because you want to do better at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know. I get enough coins as it is. I don't need to grind that out.
Mm.
So, yeah, there's like a lot of weird little stuff like that. It's like, I could have done without it, but whatever. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's Super Mario RPG. Probably still keep going for a bit, but I'm past where I was in the Super Nintendo version, which I think I had beaten I was about to beat the sword dude, the sword boss.
Yeah.
To get your first star, I think it is.
Yep.
And then, yeah, you get the second star, and I think you get Geno, and he explains the entire thing that's going on with these stars, what their purpose is and all that. And so, yeah, it's like, all right, sure. And it has like one annoying little puzzle thing. It's like a musical puzzle, but they just don't really tell you like how it really works. And that was a whole weird thing. I just looked up the answer from the Super Nintendo version, and I got a card. So I could go buy more stuff from this tadpole shop. Because they have memberships for whatever reason. So, yeah, the Super Mario RPG, it's fine.
Yep. It's exactly the game you remember it as, but now it's somewhat more, you know, the control scheme is a bit more, I guess, elegant, and they all, like, have full motion now, so.
Yeah, it has cutscenes and not just, like, isometric views of characters doing things. They still have that, the weird, like, pantomiming stuff that Mario can do. Mm-hmm. And turning into other characters. I was like, why don't you do that more often, Mario?
Mm.
Turn into Bowser and beat somebody up. But that's too imaginative for this game, I guess. So yeah, that's Super Mario RPG. That's out now. $60. The other new game I played this week is Backpack Hero. This was in the Indie World Showcase. And looked pretty neat. I played the demo. If you search for that game's name, there's an itch.io page that has a quick little web demo you can play.
Mm-hmm.
That'll kind of explain the mechanics of the battle system and all that. Yeah. And I recommend playing that to see if you want to check it out for full. So I did that and was like, ooh, this is right in my wheelhouse. Because it is a game that takes the general idea of the Resident Evil 4 inventory system of you having to like rotate these items, move them around, try and fit all the items you want into your inventory, and puts that in like a roguelite game where your character has gotten this magical backpack that can expand and hold a bunch of items. And as you run into enemies in the dungeons, you use the items in your backpack as your weapons, and you have initially like 3 energy to use for items, and they'll tell you like this is a 1 energy item weapon, you know, this is 2, this is 0 kind of thing, and you start messing around with that to get extra damage and all that kind of stuff. You also have armor to add shields to block damage that you know is coming in, so kind of like Slay the Spire, you know what your enemies are going to do for the next turn, so you know like, oh, these are going to put up their own shield, so I should go in and do as much damage as possible. That kind of stuff. So that's kind of fun system that been really getting into. And you know, there's armor and all that, and there's a lot of little modifiers of like, you know, there's armor, it's like any armor that is, you know, sitting next to this gets a +1 defense kind of thing. And that'll add to the amount of block you start with the block shield. And You can get weapons that get benefits that same way, where they'll do more damage when they're next to certain things, and you get some items that are like, do not put this next to anything or else its damage gets nerfed big time. And so as you level up in a dungeon, you get to add more inventory space to your backpack. And so you can kind of go out in any direction, northeast, south, or west on the backpack. And so like you might have items that need to be away from other things. And so you can even like build out little tunnels that are like, here's just for this item kind of thing. So I can have that do its thing and use all the rest of it for everything else. But early on, you can kind of figure out how to, you know, put stuff together to kind of get some pretty powerful builds in there that makes the rest of the dungeons pretty easy. And when you go in for a run, it's usually like three floors, maybe do two or three fights at most in a floor. But you're going around buying stuff because you're trying to collect things. Because when you finish a run, you go back up out of the dungeon to the town that, when you start, is kind of been left and abandoned. Used to be a good town, but the king or whatever has had, you know, all the people run off and all the buildings destroyed and all that. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of helping to rebuild the town, and you're using the items that you get from the dungeon to complete quests, and you can sell them in the first shop that you build to get one of three currencies that are used to expand the town with more buildings. You know, you can put down houses to expand how many people are in the town. That's a currency as well, beyond just the name people that wander around that you can talk to do different things. But I built like a farmhouse and a blacksmith, which blacksmith is where I'm using currencies and even donating loot to unlock more stuff that can get thrown into the pool of stuff that randomly shows up, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's kind of all feedback loop from going to the dungeons, coming back out and using that to build out the town and all that. And they nicely let you move the buildings around as you need to without, you know, charging any sort of extra currency for that stuff. So yeah, it's a pretty friendly system. It makes the run itself not the challenging thing, though. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it'll get tougher over time.
Oh yeah,
because some of the quests you get will be like, oh, I need you to do this thing for me, and it'll give you a special starting set of items, and like you need to keep this item in your backpack the entire time, but it maybe has some things that require it to not be next to other items. And so you have to build out, you know, the way your inventory looks to suit that, and then fit into, you know, what sort of enemies you run into and all that. So yeah, it kind of feeds back in a pretty good way that has made it a lot of fun. And I've been playing it on my Steam Deck a good bit, though I've also been playing it a good bit on my PC as well. It's a really good one of those kind of games you just keep in a window while you're watching, you know, something on Netflix or whatever, that you can kind of just come back to pretty easily. It's not resource intensive. It is a little bit different on Steam Deck because, you know, you can't as easily move stuff around as just clicking on it and dragging it around the inventory. But the controls work pretty well for a controller. So yeah, that's a game I definitely recommend if you're into that idea of inventory as a puzzle and essentially is your battle system to that. So that's been the nice indie game I've been playing this week. Other stuff I've been playing, Teardown, that's on PS Plus game catalog for extra and premium people. That is a fun sandbox chaos destruction game of sorts. The campaign itself is pretty neat, as you're just a dude who starts doing crimes for people. And that sort of balloons out to all these different jobs you get. And you'll go to a different, a good bit of maps that sometimes will ask you to keep going back to them for different things with new things involved in that. So yeah, it's a pretty cool system, though it's also flexible because it's it lets you unlock all the stuff and all the maps for sandbox mode. You don't have to play through the campaign with that, and it comes with a bunch of mods built in, and then they also added some more with a DLC, free DLC pack of extra mods from the PC release. And all those weapons, when you click on them in the mods to activate them, they show up in all the campaign maps. So while it's, you're technically not supposed to have like three things to do all your stuff with, you can kind of just cheese it with that, all the mod weapons that give you more things to do, though some of the stipulations on that will be like, oh, they have fire alarms, so don't, you know, start a bunch of fires. That kind of stuff. So it's kind of pretty flexible there. And then the sandbox mode, you can just unlock all the weapons and such, so you don't have to, you know, go through the campaign to unlock them and just sit there and kind of screw around in all the maps and just play around, see like what all the stuff does, what all kind of cool things they have in there, and use all your weapons and such to do that stuff. So yeah, it's a pretty good game to fuck around with and just play around with the physical sandboxes they have built for cool stuff in. So yeah, the only thing you're not getting is you're probably not getting any of the licensed stuff that has been made as mods for the PC version. Like they obviously have things like lightsabers that can cut down stuff pretty easily, or like a physical IKEA store that you can go in and burn down a bunch of stuff and blow things up. But for my PC, not being great with all of that more intensive physics messing stuff, this runs better. I have not been able to crash it yet.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you can put enough stuff in there in a map too. Because one of the mod maps they add in is a California home that has a bunch of stuff in there. I just started burning a bunch of things in there, and then the frame rate got real, real iffy for a bit. I also do recommend when you unlock all the weapons, there's like a nitroglycerin little thing in there that you could just stack them up, a bunch of them together. And I did that through one of the maps in the campaign, just in the sandbox mode. I just made this huge long line of these nitroglycerin tubes and blew up one chunk of it and watched it kind of blow apart the map as it sort of wound its way around to where I had it. And that was pretty fun. So it's definitely one of those kind of good fuck around games with it. So that's definitely worth checking out. And the last game I've been playing is Power Wash Simulator. They got their Back to the Future DLC out now for $8 with 5 jobs in it. I've gotten all the achievements on the Steam version for that. And that's been a lot of fun. It goes story-wise a bit different than the others. I don't know if this is like a license thing or not, but you're not necessarily brought into the world of Back to the Future, but more back to 1985 or, you know, 1983, whenever they made the original movie. As you're hired by the film producer to come in and clean the stuff from the movie. And so initially you do Doc Brown's van at the Twin Pines Mall, that kind of stuff. And the producer chimes in some, but you also get Alex, the intern, who apparently does not get to look at the script and kind of just tells you what he thinks is going on from what he sees the actors doing. And so he has some wild ideas. But yeah, you get the Doc Brown's van at the mall. You get the DeLorean time machine also to clean at the mall. And that's pretty fun, especially once you finish that, it goes in drives over and goes 88 and goes through time. Kind of fun stuff with that, which you're like, well, if this is a film, why is the DeLorean able to do that?
Yeah. And
they're just like, probably because it's cool. So yeah, you get to do the clock tower, which lets you go inside that building up to the top part where where Doc would be coming out onto the ledge to lay the wire and all that.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty cool. You get to clean inside that room as well as out on the ledge and all that. And so, yeah, that's fun. As well as they have the whole area kind of mapped out. You can kind of go walk around and take a look at it. So I was doing that, just enjoying the sights there.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get brought back, you know, for when they start working on 2 and 3, to work on the Holomax Theater.
Yeah.
Which disappointingly is the only part of the map that has been changed for Back to the Future 2.
Mm.
The rest of that, like, square is the same as it was before, which is a little disappointing, but the way they frame it in the story is, like, they just started working on it and got the Holomax Theater built, and then apparently when the producer, like, explains the plot to the people making the set and all that, they apparently destroyed their brains, so they thought the dark present was part of the future thing, so they get it trashed and dirtied at the same time, you know, before they even do anything. So they bring you in to activate the holographic shark. So that's fun thing to do. And yeah, once you're done with that, you get to work on the train from Back to the Future 3. And that's pretty fun. That's got a lot of stuff on it. And yeah, when you're done with that, that thing flies away and goes to whatever time Docta. Again, kind of suspending the disbelief that you're in, like, the 80s when this movie's being made, and that is supposed to be on the set of the movie, but this thing works, actually. And it's like, eh, it's cool. Thing to see. Kind of the fan service you want out of it. So that's fun. A little disappointing they don't have, like, a story of somehow you're in the world of Back to the Future. Like they do for all the other jobs where, you know, you're actually in Midgar or, you know, going to Lara Croft's mansion to do stuff, or, you know, in the SpongeBob's area, that kind of stuff. But it's still pretty fun for what it is. I could have maybe hoped for another map here. Maybe have the, I don't know where, maybe Doc's workshop. In either the past timeline in 1955 or in the Old West, those would be fun to do. But what they got there is pretty good for that. And the trophies and achievements aren't too bad either. So that's been fun. And that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I have been playing. I'm actually almost finished with Alan Wake 2, which is... And I really can't talk about that game enough because I can't talk about a lot of it because there's so much in this game that if I don't want to spoil for people, but this game goes off the rails, like, in some just amazing ways. There's everything from, like, there's, like, a musical section that happens that's, like, a full-on rock opera type thing with, like, choreography and everything. There's, of course, the amazing soundtrack. There's all these amazing in-jokes and everything. And it's just, it's an amazing game. A lot of fun. Highly recommend it. But on top of that, I've also gone back to playing Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. And that game, specifically, because I had finished both, like, the main game, you know, Shovel of Hope, and the other one, which was the Plague Knight one. So I went back and I was like, I'm going to go further into the King Knight one, which is called King of Cards. And basically, the King of Cards one is essentially two games in one. On the one hand, you've got, you know, the standard Shovel Knight style platforming, only in this case, you know, since you're playing King Knight, it's has, like, a different move set. You don't really, like, you have to, like, use this, like, shoulder charge ability to, like, bounce off stuff, and it'll leave you, like, sort of twirling and pirouetting in the air that you can then use to, like, bounce all over the place, stuff like that. And I actually, the platforming ones, all four of the Shovel Knight related games, the platforming sections are probably the shortest in this one. Granted, there are more of them, which is, you know, somewhat different from the other games. And there does, I think, seem to be, like, more locations and, like, different paths that you can take to go to different areas as well. So there's also that. But the other half of the game, and arguably probably the main half of it, is the card battle game. And let me tell you, the card battle game, on the surface, it's really simple. It's just, you know, you've got all these cards, and each of these cards, you know, they can push a card in one direction and or other directions. Some of them can push them further, and some of them can switch back and forth between them. Some of them can blow up stuff. It's fairly simple. And, you know, when all of the spaces on the main game board are covered up, the game's over. But let me tell you, this the card game portion of this game is incredibly hard. And you really got to, like, get a idea for the rules of this game and how, you know, this game is played. Because otherwise, it will just annihilate you, like, really quick. And here's the thing. Every time you lose in one of these games, the AI can take one of your cards. So theoretically, you can keep constantly losing to one person and lose your entire deck. Now, the good news is there's like a person in like the game sort of hub where you can buy all of your cards back for a fairly low price. But it is annoying. That said, it's still a lot of fun, and it actually kind of goes a bit more into like overall like what the lore of this game world is. Like, for example, you've probably been thinking, like, you know, one of the constant sort of enemies that you're constantly coming up in these games is this poor, just random rat that's like flying around on like a helicopter propeller who's like not really doing anything. He's just kind of hanging by it. And it's like, who would constantly just keep capturing these poor rats and strapping them to these machines? It turns out it's King Knight. King Knight is the one who's doing it. Because they are his quote-unquote subjects. Because King Knight is a loser who wants to be a king, and he lives with his mother and all this stuff. It's kind of sad and pathetic and also hilarious at the same time. But what's neat is the whole sort of major part of the game is you're trying to go through a tournament, more or less, to beat all of the major card game judges in this. And the first one is like King Pridemore. Who's like the original king that King Knight ends up usurping later on. There's also the Tropal King. He's also one of the other judges you have to face. There's some others. And as you go on, you can actually recruit a bunch of new people. Because what happens is when you win the first like mini tournament, you get recruited by Bard Knight into this sort of like flying, this airship that's manned by like these flying pirates, more or less these air pirates. And you can sort of like gather new members of your crew along the way as you go. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's an enjoyable game. It's really amazing to realize just how they managed to not once, not twice, not three times, but four different times managed to go back to the drawing board, take all the basic guts of Shovel Knight, and somehow managed to like reinvent the wheel. And it just makes me really excited for Mina the Hollower. So, but that's what I've been playing. So, Dan Reb, what about you?
I've also been playing Super Mario RPG. I'm much further than Chris, though. Chris mentioned he has one star. I have four. Yep. And I've never beaten this game. Like, you know, I've talked about this a few times in the past. I'll go ahead and tell my story again. I did not own a Super Nintendo. I am an RPG guy, but I have, like, a lot of the SNES RPGs are, like, they're foreign to me. So my chance to play them was on the Game Boy Advance. And unfortunately, Mario RPG was not included in that. I think the first time we had it, like, on a semi-modern console was via the Virtual Console on the Wii. And then the succeeding platforms after that. And whenever I played the game, whether it was via a ROM or whatever it may be, I always lost my progress right at the point where you recruit Bowser. So that'll be a spoiler to those who didn't play it yet, but the game is more than 30 years old, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is what it is there. But yeah, for some reason, there was like some platforming that I just couldn't do, no matter what platform I played it on. and I am happy to report that I am beyond that point now. I've already recruited Princess Peach. I have 4 stars now, and there's 7. So I don't know if I'm actually like halfway through the game, or whether there's going to be some plot twist that adds more content. But yeah, I am very impressed with what we've had so far, and I think the biggest change that no one's talked about that I've seen is the fact that, you know, we're playing the game with analog now. That option, like, what wasn't available with the SNES, obviously, because, you know, that was primarily with the D-pad, and with an isometric game like this, it helps a lot. I'm really enjoying that aspect of it, but, you know, the main thing that's been changed would be the graphics, obviously. I enjoy the art style that we have here. Mario's like a little thumb dude, and you could actually see the some of the animation in their faces here, which obviously, like, they couldn't do in the past. So they've done a good job compensating there. I've really enjoyed that content. And then the music is just sublime. You have the option of going into the settings and going back to the classic music, or, you know, the modern feel. But then if you're going through a cutscene, it's going to be the modern stuff no matter what. You can't really change that. But yeah, aside from that, the game is hilarious. I'm loving every character so far. Like, Mallow thinks he's a frog, which is like the funniest thing ever. Like, I think he's a cloud. I'm not sure. I haven't gotten there yet. I think I have around maybe 6-7 hours into the game so far, and, you know, hope maybe I can beat it by next week and go ahead and get started on Game of the Year stuff. So yeah, Super Mario RPG, totally recommended game, and this is one that I've been looking forward to for a while, and so far it's hit every note. Moving on, I've also started Like a Dragon, The Man Without a Name, available on Game Pass. I did not buy it, but yeah, this game is pretty much a bridge between Like a Dragon and Yakuza 7, and then the one coming out soon. I already forget what it's called. Infinite Wealth, I believe. And the cool thing here is you're using what's his name? You're using Kiryu. So they pretty much go over what happened in Yakuza 6, and, you know, he pretty much died. He's supposed to be off the grid. Circumstances happened in which now people know he's alive again, and we got to figure that out. But at the same time, you're exploring a whole bunch of what's that part of Japan that they call it again? Kamachiro or whatever it may be. I forget it. It's all the same places that you were in Yakuza Like a Dragon. So I'm really enjoying just being in that exact world again, and you're pretty much in areas that Ichiban Kasuga and his party was where he was just at. So for example, you're in the homeless encampment and you're pretty much there like a few hours later, so you just missed them, and the game has done a good job of like putting you in areas where you just missed them, and I'm like, oh man, if he was just here a little bit a while ago, he would have seen Ichiban and everybody. So yeah, this is a game that I plan on getting back into as soon as I beat Super Mario RPG, considering I know how short it is. But yeah, really enjoyable. Not much to say aside from what I played with the demo. It's pretty much just classic Yakuza gameplay. You know, you're doing a side quest one moment, but then as far as the actual battle system goes, it's all fully action combat. You have some of the abilities that make Kiryu a secret agent. Like, he can go ahead and slide through the streets. He can go ahead and use this electronic lasso to cause havoc on his enemies. Like, basically, like, it's things that you'll see in other games, but put in Yakuza mode, and it's just hilarious from there. It's funny because, like, Yakuza can always be as serious or as funny as you make it out to be, and that's really the charm in this series that the game has really encapsulated. And then last but not least, on again, off again with Final Fantasy 16. I have 3 more chapters left, but, you know, as with the courses, whenever something's out, I put it away to play that game. But yeah, I'm really near the ending of Final Fantasy 16 now. I've gotten back to a point where it's not uncomfortable when I go back to it, because I'm playing it in between games of spurts. And really enjoying the game so far. Again, I have 3 chapters left, so the end is within sight. But I'm at a point where The side quests are starting to get annoying. And this is really the main knock on the game. People don't like the side quests just because they're plentiful and they're pretty basic. They don't really require you to do much. They're kind of like Animal Crossing favors where you just, you know, go from point A to point B after you receive that task. And then all of a sudden you go from point B to point C. And usually you solve the thing from there. Maybe you'll be a boss, whatever it may be. Like, it's very Yakuza in its intent, but at the same time, just way more serious. And the reason why it's rough now is because we're towards the end, but at the same time, side quests are popping up left and right in areas that you already visited. And the quick travel definitely helps, but the fact that they put so many out at this point in time when you don't really think they're needed just really bogs the pacing down. And that's really unfortunate because the game has great pacing otherwise, especially when you decide to just go with the main story. Don't get me wrong, the side quests do help and they really add to the overall setting, but when it comes to the plot at hand, they haven't really helped yet. And I'm already this far in, I might as well just do them all before I actually beat the game. But you know, on Thursday, I spent like 4 hours doing side quests, and in that amount of time, I probably could have beaten the game, but I've been doing the side quests instead. So it is what it is there. Even though that's bogged down experience, I still very much enjoy it. And with the recent announcement of DLC coming, I'm excited to, like, you know, relive more legends in Clive's shoes. So yeah, that's been about it for me.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news here. We got a new month for PS Plus game catalog and some more Game Pass stuff kind of coinciding here to tell us what we got for the rest of the month here. And so, yeah, the PS Plus game catalog, we got a bunch of stuff here. Mm-hmm. Teardown's already been noted there.
Yeah.
That came out on the 15th. The one game that's not launching with the rest, but the rest will be here on the 21st, on Tuesday, just ahead of Thanksgiving. So you'll be able to get a chance to check that stuff out here, and let's mm-hmm. see what else is on there. For PS4, Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen. Mm-hmm. Worth checking that out because the sequel's coming out here. Maybe we'll find out. I think they're supposed to have an event this weekend coming up. Maybe the week after that, I'm not sure, but they're going to have a big event for Dragon's Dogma 2. So you can check out the first one and see kind of the weird way that that game works.
Mm.
It's got shades of Monster Hunter to it, but you're kind of more agile and able to like climb up on the big monsters you're fighting, that kind of stuff, and do damage to them, almost like a Shadow of the Colossus kind of thing. But you can also take AI companions to help you out. And, you know, you loan those to other people, the ones you have, as well as getting stuff from other people. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now let's see what else we got here. Mobile Suit Gundam.
Yeah.
Extreme versus Maxi Boost On for mm-hmm. the PS4. It's a 2v2 game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we control mobile suits from the many Gundam series that are out there.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, this is a port of the 2016 arcade title. So yeah, 180 suits from 36 titles in the arcade version, plus two extra suits that have never appeared in the arcade version before. So you want a weird little arcadey game, you can mm-hmm. check that one out. Also for PS4, Dead Island Riptide, a Definitive Edition. Sort of when they made like an expanded expansion version of the game, the original game. Mm-hmm. And kind of have some more stuff for you to do in that world. So, yeah, you can check that out. PS5 and PS4, Superliminal. As mm-hmm. a first-person puzzle game that plays with perspective and optical illusion type stuff. That seems like a really cool one of these that I just never got around to. So that's one I'm looking forward to checking out.
Yeah, that I've seen people play that one. That one is real mind true of a game.
Yeah. So yeah, that looks neat. For the PS5 and PS4, Ayuden Chronicle Rising. It's the sort of side-scrolling action RPG spin-off of the main game that they are supposed to have out next year. So you can check that out. That's it's a pretty fun game. It's just kind of tedious in terms of how you're going through the same areas multiple times to deal with quests and all that kind of stuff. So that's one worth checking out if you have not yet. Let's see. Also for PS4, Nobunaga's Ambition, Taishi. Let's see. Become a daimyo and govern a clan as you work to improve your country through civil administration, diplomacy. So that sounds like maybe a Civ-esque strategy game set in the Dynasty Warriors universe. So that's cool. If you want to check out that. Also for PS4, Alternate Jake Hunter, Daedalus, The Awakening of Golden Jazz. That's a hell of a title there.
Yeah.
As a New York City set crime thriller visual novel, blends detective work such as interrogations and clue finding, along with unique storytelling elements. Murder mystery thing. So that's kind of neat.
Yep.
Also for PS4, River City Melee Match or Melee Mock. This is another River City game. Kunio Kun game that. This is. Let's see. I think it's one like a 4-player, maybe sports-ish game.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But yeah, you can check that out. And then for the classics that are for PlayStation Premium users, they got for PS5 and PS4, Grandia.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a classic JRPG.
Mm-hmm.
For the PS1, one of the first that I think has like a timeline system to it.
Yep.
As you're doing fights, you can pay attention to how your different attacks will affect how enemies move up or back on the battle timeline kind of stuff. And that's neat. So there's that. Also for PS4, PS5, Jet Moto, the PS1 game, classic arcade racing game, but on like futuristic, jet skis that hover.
Yep.
So that's cool. I assume they're going to get 2 and 3 out in the next month or two
in time, I guess,
for that. So that'll be neat to see. So I think 2 is when they start getting the Mountain Dew advertising in it. As that was the late 90s.
Yep.
Or if you made like an extreme sports game, it was going to have advertising with, Mountain Dew, maybe Doritos, maybe Pepsi. You're going to get some sort of advertising in there of some kind. Let's see, for PS4 and PS5, Up, the PS2 game, or no, PSP game, PSP version. So yeah, the PSP edition of the game based on the movie, the Pixar movie Up. So, which was a great movie. Not sure how you turn that into a game, other than just a generic platform. So it's probably exactly with the old guy Carl and his sidekick, Russell. So there you go. Also on PS4, PS5, Klonoa Fantasy Reverie series. So if you've not checked out the remaster of those two games, this is a great one to jump into. They're classic platformers, 2.5D platformers. You're mostly moving side-scrolling, but you get opportunities to go into the background and that kind of stuff. Very good style and all that, so that's worth checking out. If you have not done so, and I guess for PS4, Parappa the Rapper 2, he's never put this on PlayStation Plus before. Seems weird because I think all the rest of theirs are on there for the PS2 games. So, yeah, you can check that out. It's probably going to be a bit tougher because of latency stuff, but maybe that'll work out fine. That's a neat little game. It's about noodles.
Yep.
Like spaghetti noodles.
Yep.
He gets a lifetime supply of noodles, and that causes havoc in Parappa's life and the town's life. So yeah, there you go. Pretty good lineup.
Yeah, the big one here for me is Klonoa Fantasy Reverie series. This is a game that I've had my eye on since last year, primarily because the PS2 game was like one that I played a lot of when I was younger, but I didn't have a PS2 at the time. So looking forward to jumping into that because I've never seen a deal on it. And now it's on the service, so that's cool.
Oh, those go on sale all the time. On sale on Switch eShop right now for $11.99.
That's why. I don't want to buy a plane on Switch.
Yeah. it's been on sale on the PlayStation 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's Bandai Namco. They're going to keep dropping the price on that.
Yeah.
Trying to see if I can get a history on that. I happen to be on Deku Deals here. But yeah, it goes on sale pretty often. Yeah, it looks like it was just on sale on the PlayStation under $15. But you don't want to put any money down to check it out now. It'll be on PlayStation Plus, so that's good.
I think I was just holding out hope for a $10 deal.
I'm sure it will happen. Bandai Namco's the king of putting games on sale for like 80 to 90% off. At a certain point, if you like anything they have, just wait. So yeah. That's it for PlayStation Plus. Pretty good lineup. For Game Pass, let's see what they have here. Yeah, available now. There's Coral Island. This is the 1.0 version of the Life Sim that's been in early access on Xbox for a while. So you can check that out. You're on an island, a tropical island, surprisingly, from the title. So yeah, you can check that out. Also available now, Persona 5 Tactica. I had that download on my Xbox. I've not started it yet. I'll probably check it out this week coming up. Heard good things about it, so that'll be neat. And that's it for the week. Nothing surprising coming for the holiday weekend. But on the 28th, for console, Dune Spice Wars.
Yeah.
Like, it's been on PC Game Pass for a bit.
Yep.
But it's on console coming up here. This is a 4X RTS. From the developers of Northgard, the indie like RTS game. So that's neat. Be able to check that out. Also on November 28th, Rollerdrome for Xbox and PC. That is the really fun third person rollerblading slash shooter game. We get to do all sorts of wild tricks and shooting dudes in this like futuristic sport set in 2030, the far off year of 2030. So yeah, that looks to be it for everything coming out for the rest of the month. So some good stuff there as we go into the quiet period, but maybe the Game Awards will be where they announce some more stuff.
Yep.
Actually, they'll probably announce, but probably have some surprises then. We'll see. But yeah. Let's get to the rest of the news here. If in case you didn't know, Half-Life has reached its 25th anniversary. One of the probably the game that ended the reign of Doom as the big first person shooter on PC.
Yeah. And I mean that alone would be like a big deal, but it also did so many new things with the medium that was just so revolutionary. Like, if you play it now, it definitely has not aged well in some areas. A lot of that has to do just simply with the fact of like the technological limitations that they had at the time. And keep in mind, this was like a high-end PC game back in the day. So
yeah,
which, I mean, let's be fair, all of the Half-Life games have been that. Like, it took them basically completely inventing a new piece of technology for the third Half-Life game, you know, Half-Life Alyx, to be able to come into existence. And that was well over a decade after Half-Life 2 came out. But the one thing that this game did different that all the other games did is it was the first game where everything happened in real time. The story happened in real time. The action happened in real time. There were no cutscenes or any cinematics or like that. You were in the middle of the action, and it was always going on around you. That whole first part of the game that, by modern standards, just infuriatingly long, like tram ride to the lab, is basically them showing off, like, this is what we can do.
Yeah, it's the game that ended the reign of like the Doom clones. That's what people called the genre at that point.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, we can do more than just what Doom did.
Yeah.
And there are various games that tried other things, just never got that big. Half-Life was the one that pushed through and kind of made, you know, it feel like a world and not just a map.
Yeah. And it was well written too. That was the other thing. They got like an actual honest to God, like, you know, New York Times bestselling author to write the script and scenario for this game.
Yeah.
And the sequel, by the way. And apparently, like, Gordon Freeman is a fan because he's got two of the dude's books in his locker when you're getting the stuff out of it. And also, it was just, I mean, it was just, it was so well designed for the time, anyway. The fact that, you know, it's a, technically a first-person shooter, but for a good chunk of the first part of the game, you do no shooting. It's almost all based around, you know, using that crowbar or trying to figure out some kind of physics puzzle or, you know, stuff like that. And
yeah,
it just, it did so many new things. It's one of those things where it's like going back, a lot of newer people, if they go back to try and play, they'd be like, well, what's the big deal? Because so much of what this game did first has been so thoroughly copied and adapted and in many ways improved upon by other game studios since.
Like Halo took a lot from that.
Yeah, Halo definitely took a lot.
And then Half-Life Valve 2, or Half-Life 2 came out and then put it in a new atmosphere.
It put it in the stratosphere is what it did, because that was the first game where you could literally basically interact with just about every single thing you came across in the environment. Because you got the gravity gun, and the gravity gun was basically a revelation. Because you could literally pick up basically any object in the game that thing could, you know, hold and throw forward, and you could use it against anyone and anything. So much so that you could definitely see like some envy coming from the people at id Software when Doom 3 came out, and they came out with the expansion that had the, oh, look, it's totally not a gravity gun, but it is a gravity gun.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the record, though, I will say, if you want to play this, go ahead. It's, you know, like I said, a lot of parts of it haven't aged well, but other parts of it are still quite pretty solid. But if you really do want to like play this game, I would recommend just playing the Black Mesa project.
Yeah, or turn on like God mode or something.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about the pure difficulty, or maybe do try the difficulty.
Yeah. But to be honest, the Black Mesa project basically takes this game and improves upon it in basically every way. The graphics are better. Parts of the game of the original that just weren't really that good have been redesigned from the ground up. It's definitely worth it. But yeah.
Yeah. And and Half-Life is also essentially with all the expansion stuff they did for that is where Gearbox kind of came into prominence.
Yep.
Because they worked on some of the expansions for Valve.
Yeah.
There. And so you kind of got that studio kind of rising up. They went from that to, I forget what else they did. Brothers in Arms has kind of came out of that.
Yeah.
From them. And yeah, cool. You kind of got a lot of stuff like that. That's like,
also, it's basically like one of the birth, the part of the birth of esports, because this is where SOCOM originated from.
Counter-Strike?
Yeah, Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike and just a bunch of like the various modifications and stuff that would inevitably become like, you know, franchises in their own right. Because the other great thing about Half-Life was how... you know, Valve basically gave, you know, wannabe and amateur game designers basically all the tools to use to make your own projects using, you know, Valve's guts as the foundation to build upon.
Yeah, people build a lot of different modes because there's Day of Defeat that came out of that stuff, Counter-Strike. There's just a Deathmatch classic.
Yeah.
That is also out of that.
Dystopia. That was a particularly good one. That was like a cyberpunk shooter. A lot of good stuff. And eventually, you know, we got like what was the beta version of Gary's Mod.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we got Source Filmmaker with Half-Life 2, but yeah. So, yeah, this one game basically kickstarted like an entire section of the industry.
Yeah, and yeah, Valve's celebrating the 25th anniversary by making it free on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
For not sure how long, for a good bit at least. I already own it, so I can't necessarily see that. But also, they put out a big update to make it run and look better on newer machines. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff, make it fully playable on Steam Deck without any real like adjustments needed for that stuff. So what else have they done? They added new graphic and rendering options, including software rendering on Linux and widescreen field of view.
Mm-hmm.
Also changed the game to default to the original models, not the HD ones seen in the expansions.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the weird looking boxy models of what
a
3D PC game looked like back then.
Yeah. Also, like some of the original like models that sort of went thrown to the wayside when they were originally making it.
Yeah.
So those are like in the multiplayer maps now.
Yeah. So there's that. And they also put out a big hour-long documentary that they worked with Daniel Dwyer, of formerly of GameSpot.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of his side projects. Not NoClip, but he started a new side thing to do like company-funded documentaries when they want to do that. Versus ones that are self-funded, like the ones that NoClip has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like a whole thing. So you can watch that and learn a lot about the game and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
As weird as, for as much as that game is beloved, everybody did not like the end of that game in the alien area, the Zen.
Yeah, that's where the Black Mesa project came in and basically redesigned it from the ground up.
So yeah, that's where like you could clearly tell what parts they had a lot of time to work on and what parts they didn't.
Yeah, you get to the end of the game. It's like, yeah, this is the part where, you know, Gabe and company were like, yeah, we're kind of at the finish line, guys. We just got a marathon this shit.
Yeah. Okay, it's free until the 20th. So
yeah,
by the time this probably comes out, it may be over. So
yeah,
hopefully you saw that on your own, but that's well worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of old games, The Last of Us Part 2 is getting remastered for the PS5, a thing people have wanted Naughty Dog to do ever since that game came out, you know, the summer before the PS5 launched.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're very mad about it because I guess it took them too long or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They want the new games from Naughty Dog, and it's like they're working on them.
Yeah.
They got multiple teams. They can deal with that.
Yeah. You got to remember the huge amount of labor that goes into those games. And remember, they already got into some shit for, you know, the crunch that they had to make people go through when doing Last of Us Part 2. So,
yeah. Yeah, especially with this game, I believe a lot of the work on it has been from the newer parts of the studio. Newer people have been working on this. Versus the Neil Druckmann's team that is supposedly working on something new.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they have, let's see, it'll be out January 19th, 2024. It'll have, let's see. Yeah, there's a bunch of new stuff in here. It'll be a $10 upgrade if you're already on the PS4 version.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good to see. They have a new mode called No Return, a roguelike survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can kind of go through randomized encounters and test your skills. And now, because that is a game that has a lot going on with all the combat and the stealth and all that. So that is an interesting new mode. Includes a bunch of playable characters. So that's cool. You're not just playing as Ellie there unless you want to play as her. Let's see. Yeah, the guitar. You can kind of just keep playing that.
Mm-hmm.
They have a guitar free play mode.
Yep.
So you can just do that. Use audio effects pedals to modulate your performance, play as different characters in several in-game locations, customize the mood and feel of your set. So that's cool. Let's see what else they have here. They have a new set of lost levels in part 2. Mm. Your master allows players a unique chance to check out some playable sequences previously cut from the game.
Mm.
So they've even expanded that a bit and added some cut content to the game. So that's cool. And yeah, they've also got new director's commentary across the campaigns, cutscenes for Druckmann, narrative lead Hallie Gross, and Troy Baker, Ashley Johnson, and Laura Bailey to talk over. So yeah, as well as a lot of graphics enhancements to it, 4K, unlocked frame rate options and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, this looks like a pretty fully fleshed out remastered thing. They're also putting out a new physical version bonus, like bundle thing, the WLF edition that includes, let's see, a bunch of trading cards, a patch, enamel pins, the game, and a steelbook case for it. So that looks neat. So yeah, there you go. Looks like a really good collection there.
Yeah. This one sort of came out of left field because this was actually a premature announcement. Like, I believe it showed up on the PlayStation Store, and then like, it was a data miner or so that like found it, and all of a sudden, you know, Sony really couldn't avoid the rumors anymore, and they just went ahead and announced it and made the PlayStation blog do their thing, and here we go. You know, as for like people being mad about it, you know, I think it comes with the territory of the fact that The Last of Us 2 came out in 2020. It is still fresh in people's minds, but at the same time, that was 3 years ago now, and that was a PS4 game. So this is PS5. This was going to come, and you know, it was just a matter of time. And you know, they made the announcement, and like, you know, when you look at the screenshots or the videos, there's not that much of a difference. I mean, The Last of Us 2 really pushed the PS4 to the utmost boundary of what that system was capable of. In fact, like, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the PS5 was already out yet. I'm not completely sure.
No, that was the summer before.
Okay, it was right before. And like, I know for me, my PS4 Pro was already humming. So, you know, the fact that we get to play it now on PS5 without that being a problem is there. And yeah, the fact that you can have the $10 upgrade is definitely a plus. If we didn't have that, I'm pretty sure you'd hear more of an uproar. But yeah, they did the right thing and made it more accessible to people who already bought the game. And knowing that they're still in the middle of shooting, or they will be in the middle of shooting, season 2 of the TV show, means people can go ahead and catch up in their own way there. And you'll finally have both games available on PS5 come this January. So it's a win-win. Again, you have the $10 upgrade, so it definitely helps. And I think this WLF edition is pretty cool, especially if you like went through and played the game, like, you know what all of this stuff is. So it's pretty awesome for any Last of Us fan. And then as for that new roguelite mode, it's not something that really tickles my fancy, but I'd love to try it.
Yeah, it's a good, impressive set of new content there that kind of should give everybody a reason to check it out if they have not done so before. So, and yeah, just $10 for the upgrade is pretty good. So yeah, looking forward to checking that out next year. Mm-hmm. Not a fan of it putting it right there. It's what is it, September or January 19th, right before like 50 games come out for the next like 5 weeks there. But either way, but yeah, there you go. That's cool. And yeah, as we mentioned earlier, the Game Awards is coming up soon. They announced the nominees. And we'll not go through everything here, but I'll go through a few of these categories that were interesting. And yeah, there's the main Game of the Year award, which has 6 nominees here: Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, Marvel's Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, and Super Mario Brothers Wonder. All sequels. Nothing original here, but you do get, you know, the knowledge that like nobody put in Starfield just because they expected it to be here at one point. Seems like that kind of shook out, as I think it's only nominated for Best RPG, which is maybe where it belongs on that. Yeah. For as much as it is an RPG, I guess. So yeah, that's a pretty solid list of games there. Let's see. Best Game Direction has Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Tears of the Kingdom, Spider-Man 2, and Mario Brothers Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a surprising list there. Let's see. Narrative, Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty, Final Fantasy 16, and Spider-Man 2. I would say maybe I disagree with Phantom Liberty being there as like an expansion thing.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, full-fledged games having to pull, wait for, you know, full entire game.
Mm.
Versus just a series of missions, even though I've heard the story is good, but you know, there's less that needs to go on there, for that compared to other stuff here. I'd be surprised if that wins it over some of these other games. Maybe Baldur's Gate 3 should win it for most writing.
Let's be honest, Baldur's Gate, pretty much everybody's shoe in for what's going to be game of the
year. For Game of the Year, I've heard people saying it's either Tears of the Kingdom, Baldur's Gate 3, or Alan Wake 2, and I'm like, it would be hilarious if it's like Spider-Man or something.
Mm-hmm.
To see people freak out that much, but
mm-hmm.
I've never played Baldur's Gate, but I don't know. I just don't think you top Zelda's Ascend. If Baldur's Gate has their own version of Ascend, I see it. I just don't, but you know, I've been wrong before.
Yeah, I think Baldur's Gate 3 is there because it brought a genre that died for many years back to prominence and to the success it has, becoming a very popular game in that genre that used to be a hindrance to anybody that tried that.
Mm-hmm.
And that Larian has kind of built that up over the course of their last few games in that genre.
Mm-hmm.
It made sort of a standout game in that way. This is the new game that people are horny about, all the characters, the way that Hades was.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing that stands out for it as well.
Mm.
Let's see. Art Direction is Alan Wake 2. Hi-Fi Rush gets on there, which is a good choice. Tears of the Kingdom, Lies of P, and Super Mario Brothers Wonder. Lies of P is also an interesting choice there.
Yeah.
For its weird, freaky puppet Bloodborne thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. What else? They got best performance for voice acting, motion, and or performance capture. There's Ben Starr in Final Fantasy 16. Cameron Monaghan from Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Idris Elba in Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty, which I've heard British people being like, what the fuck is his accent in that? Because he is a British man, but he's using a different accent.
Well, yeah, he's using a neutral American accent.
Yeah, and I've seen people being like, what is that? Like, it sticks out for people in that way. But let's see here. Melanie LeBird in Alan Wake 2, which I believe is Saga Anderson. Neil Newborn in Baldur's Gate 3. I'm not sure what. Who that voice actor is in that game. I'm going to double check here. Oh, it's Asterion, of course. That's the one character people are horny for Baldur's Gate 3. And then there's Jiri Lowenthal in Marvel Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Parker, which is a pretty good choice. I would have maybe gone for Miles Morales, but Peter's kind of the big focus of that game. So there's that. The innovation and accessibility has a lot of good choices here. Diablo 4, Forza Motorsport, Hi-Fi Rush, Marvel Spider-Man 2, Mortal Kombat 1, and Street Fighter 6. You could definitely go for like Spider-Man, maybe Forza there. I'm struggling to think what Diablo 4 has. I don't know, but Street Fighter 6 also has some good stuff and could be some pretty good choices there. Yeah, the way they talk, they push indies down into categories like Games for Impact, which has A Space for the Unbound, Chance of Sennar, Goodbye Volcano High, Chia, Terra Nil, and Venba. Terra Nil is maybe the one I would take out of this and put in. I forget what I was thinking about. I forget what that was. The one that kind of stuck out to me is like could be replaced by. All the others have some very good messages to them.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. So, yeah. Shame I don't think any of those made it to the main indie list. Let's see. Yeah, there's best ongoing game and best community support, which I don't really understand the difference between those, but I guess community support tends to more the community people dealing with their communities, that kind of stuff. Mm. Of a best ongoing game just has the pure content.
Mm-hmm.
But that has Apex Legends, Cyberpunk 2077, which I would not put that in there. Final Fantasy 14, Fortnite, and Genshin Impact. I would not put Genshin Impact on. I would put No Man's Sky in there.
Mm-hmm.
They literally added a new race to the game.
Yep.
As well as a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like the game that, and also, you know, massively upgraded the game to work in PlayStation VR 2.
Yeah.
And all that. And it's like, okay, I guess that doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Cyberpunk should be on there, the game that was half work and when it launched and has finally only recently gotten into a decent enough state
mm-hmm.
to sell you more content for that. But yeah, and then community support, they have Baldur's Gate 3, Cyberpunk, Destiny 2, Final Fantasy 14, mm-hmm. and No Man's Sky.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, that's where No Man's Sky goes. But yeah, literally a lot of that is just what's his face just posting, here's the 50 things that are in the new update. Mm-hmm. That we're launching and that kind of stuff. And it's like, I think that would have been better in the other one. But oh well. Mm-hmm. Best independent game. There's Cocoon, Dave the Diver, Dredge, Sea of mm-hmm. Stars, and Viewfinder.
Yeah.
All those are good games. I think they mm-hmm. could have had a sixth game here.
Yep.
That's like random categories have six things in it and others have five. But this one also, Dave the Diver is not an indie game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rocket is a wholly owned subsidiary of Nexon, which is a huge mm-hmm. company that is publicly traded. If you're a company that's publicly traded, you should not be on indie games.
Yeah.
Which I think would exclude Devolver Digital, which mm-hmm. I'd be fine with. I've gone on record as like, I think Devolver and maybe Annapurna Interactive are kind of big enough at this point that maybe they don't qualify yeah. as indie, as they're just regular publishers
mm-hmm.
that focus on smaller games. But yeah, Dave the Diver is not an indie game.
Yeah, that was definitely a point of discussion in my social feeds. And, yeah, I am of that opinion. Like, Dave the Diver should not be on here. But
mm-hmm.
then again, you know, for double standards, I also don't think Annapurna and Devolver's qualify for the same sort of exclusion. So
yeah,
tough to say. But yeah. Happy to see you start. You know.
Yeah, like Annapurna is part of a major media company.
Mm-hmm.
They're not one of the big studios, but they're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
They publish a lot of weird stuff that the other studios won't. And they mm-hmm. kind of have a fun style to them. But yeah. There's only one game here that is self-published. That's Sea of Stars
mm-hmm.
by Sabotage Studio.
Yeah.
Viewfinder is Thunderful Games. Dredge is Team 17. And it's like, yeah, it brings into that discussion of like, are the indie publishers, you know, indies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The only, like, the way they describe this is a game made outside of the traditional publisher system.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, how are these, you know, indie publishers different from the traditional mm-hmm. publisher system? Other than the scale of the funding. And it's like, yeah, that's the thing that's going to continue. People are trying to argue that indie is a stylistic thing, and it's like, no.
No.
Because, like, Nintendo can make pixel games, and that doesn't mm-hmm. games. So, yeah, that's the main rant I had for this thing. Mm-hmm. There's Best Debut Indie with Cocoon, Dredge, Pizza Tower, in case you want games that are fucking weird as hell.
Yeah.
Venba and Viewfinder.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all good. Could have probably gone some other options as well, but I don't have a great grasp on which of the indie games I've played this year the first ones from those studios not that's my fault on that. But yeah, there's some stuff. There's VR action game mm-hmm. action games where Armored Core 6 gets a nomination
mm-hmm.
That's the weird category where it's Armored Core, Dead Island 2, Ghost mm-hmm. Runner 2, Hi-Fi Rush, and Remnant 2.
Yeah,
it's like, here's all the games you didn't want to put anywhere else.
Yeah.
An action adventure has Alan Wake 2, Tears of the Kingdom, Spider-Man 2, mm-hmm. Resident Evil 4, and Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Yep.
There's like four of those five are in the Game of the Year category.
Mm-hmm.
They went for it with role-playing game by putting 16 in there, Final Fantasy 16.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole argument that's been going on the internet for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Best family game. They have Super Mario Brothers Wonder in there, which I've heard repeatedly is not a good family game. because the thing with that game, they made Yoshi and I think Nabbit as the like kid characters.
Mm.
But I've heard multiple parents be like, my kids don't want to play as either of those two. They want to play as like Peach or, you know, Mario or whatever, but you can't give those abilities that make them, you know, not take damage or whatever to the other characters. And that's kind of the issue where it's like, oh, those kids were like Sonic Superstars more than Super Mario Brothers Wonder because it's easier to play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's where you fucked up when you make kids want Sonic more than Mario.
Yep.
Not to mention Sonic Superstars is definitely not easier to play. As a family, yeah. Mario is. But yeah, my vote's for Disney here just because, you know, I've talked about it before. The fact that you can go off screen and the camera will come back and you don't have to worry about, like, the other player screwing you up as you could in Mario. It's more wholesome to me that way.
Yeah, so I think this Mario is the first one without the characters being able to physically interact with each other versus the new Super Mario games.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, but obviously if one player is better than the other and, like, you know, you're speedrunning and you're catching up, it's not very fun for the person catching up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go on that. That category is always the, here's all the Nintendo and Nintendo-like games to that. So, though Nintendo's all over the best simulation/strategy game, as they got Advance Wars 1 and 2, Fire Emblem Engage, and Pikmin 4 in there.
Mm.
Amongst City Skylines 2 and Company Heroes 3. Like, there's three games that are way different, though, but there you go. And sports/racing shows you the audience of people that are voting on this, as the only sports game in here is EA Sports FC 24. There's no, like, MLB The Show or Madden or 2K or anything. All the rest are racing games. Forza Motorsport, Hot Wheels Unleashed 2, F1 23 and the Crew Motor Fest. So that's kind of where you can see, like, oh, the people voting on this are more into racing games because they went that deep on the racing games to be like, the Crew should get nominated here. Hot Wheels Unleashed 2 should get nominated here.
Yeah.
For that. So that's kind of the weird thing. But let's see. Adaptation has Castlevania, Nocturne, Gran Turismo, The Last of Us, Super Mario Brothers movie, and Twisted Metal, which those are all pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe go Twisted Metal, the ones I've seen here.
Yeah.
Which is just Mario Brothers. And I am getting The Last of Us from Target for $10 whenever I get that. And yeah, for the weirdest category, most anticipated game, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, Hades 2, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, and Star Wars Outlaws, and Tekken 8. Three of these four are out in the first 2 months of the year. They're out within like 2.5 months of the Game Awards happening. So you can go pre-order them now. You can't pre-order Hades 2. Maybe not Outlaws. I don't. Maybe you can. There's no date on that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird category.
I mean, like, part of the problem is just we don't know what's coming out next year, and the Game Awards is pretty much what tells us.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, that's some of the categories here. Some pretty good stuff. We'll probably stream this.
Yeah.
That'll be the 7th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Let me double check. Yeah, the 7th. So that'll be something we'll talk over and see how, you know, what kind of cool stuff gets announced. Maybe GTA will get announced there, or maybe they'll do that between now and the show. But there you go for that stuff. And let's get to some bad news. Amazon Games, a game company you never think of.
Yeah.
They've laid off 180 jobs.
Yep.
In their games division, let's see, the layoffs are focused in two areas: the Crown Twitch channel, for to be eliminated altogether, and the game growth teams.
Mm.
They were notified through an email from the VP of Amazon Games. It's the second wave of layoffs the division of the company has faced this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that sucks a lot. That's a lot of people there.
Yeah.
For that, But yeah, then we got next here, Digital Bros.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't know this company by name. They are a parent company to somebody you might know of, 505 Games, and probably other stuff as well. They announced plans to lay off 30% of its staff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a number that people have on how many people they have. Mm-hmm. It might be tough if you don't know the entire workforce or whatever, but that's a lot of people, 30%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're saying they're doing so to align with the new competitive market and be just like everybody else laying off people, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they published, you know, Control, Gun, or Ghost Runner 2, Payday 2. They published the PC version of Death Stranding, but like that. But yeah, they've done some good work, but yeah, they're just another one of these companies laying off a bunch of. And the biggest one, the Embracer Group, they have announced that the wave of layoffs they've been doing since the summer started has reached over 900 people.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the number I saw is 904.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a shitload of people. Part of that was closing Volition down.
Mm-hmm.
I think shortly after they celebrated their 30th anniversary. Let's see. There have been layoffs at Crystal Dynamics, Beam Dogs, Zen Studios, Digic Pictures, and more, as well as a bunch of other stuff going on at Embracer. So yeah, not a great time for layoffs, especially at this point in the where, you know, people are looking forward to the holidays, maybe a little bit of time off, and getting some awful news that they'll have to add job searches to that whole period. So hopefully they got some good severance to help help them make ends meet for a bit here while they search for a job. But yeah, not a great time for more layoffs.
Yeah.
So yeah, and some more worker news. Sega employees have said that Sega is threatening mass layoffs if they keep wanting to unionize. As retaliation for unionizing, a new unfair labor practice filed by the Communication Workers of America accuses Sega of forcing employees into a meeting where they were told their jobs would be offshored to Japan and Europe rather than bargaining over the layoffs directly with the union, which you might remember when they voted to form this union.
Yeah,
Sega was like, hey, we'll work with them. We'll see what we can do. And you can tell how much they gave a shit about that. They're threatening the layoffs would impact 40% of the group, roughly 80 unionized employees total. Being a union does not necessarily mean you won't get laid off. It just means you should get better severance package as a result, should that happen. But obviously, people shouldn't be losing their jobs because they've unionized. They should just, you know, bargain with them and get a good deal for them.
Yeah.
Then they get happy employees.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're going to deal with this complaint being filed and see how that goes. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And that's your bad news for the week.
Yeah.
Lame, obviously. Like, this was like a few days after that they said that they'd be giving a whole bunch of Atlas employees raises. Oh, well, how about in America? I guess that's your answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got some slightly good news here. The Nintendo Indie World Showcase had a bunch of stuff in it. We're not going to go over everything here because it's a lot of random indie games. You can check out the list here for more information on them. But let's see. They showed off the Shantae Advance game, which is them going back to the prototype Shantae game they made for the GBA. The original, you might not remember, was a Game Boy Color game. And so their follow-up, they're like, hey, we should do something on this Game Boy Advance, and just kind of never followed through with it. Decided to work on other stuff. But now they've come back to it with Shantae Advance Risky Revolution. That'll be coming out sometime next year on PlayStation, Switch, and PC. Let me see. They had some timed console exclusives here. There's On Your Tail. This is a, let me see what this is. Yeah, story-driven life simulation game featuring a bunch of anthropomorphic animals. Sleuthy, story-driven life sim of relaxation, investigation, and knowing how to play your cards right.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might be able to play actual cards in this, I'm not sure, but
that
seemed neat. That is Switch and PC next year, timed console exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
There's Howl, which is like a turn-based strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
But not maybe what you think about, but there's a demo out now on the Switch, but that's coming to
mm-hmm.
PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch and PC. Yeah, I think the Switch version's out now. Might not be out on the other platforms yet. Yeah, there's Backpack Hero. I talked about that. That's a good one. There's a Highland Song that's out December 5th for Switch and PC. That's a neat looking game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a narrative adventure game with a lot of like musical stuff to it.
Oh yeah,
rhythm and survival elements that has a really nice style to it. So that's one mm-hmm. to keep an eye on. Moonstone Island has been out on PC for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo's gotten the Switch exclusive on that for a timed console exclusive at launch. That's spring of next year. Outer Wilds is finally coming to the Switch on December 7th.
Mm-hmm.
So be able to check that out. Planet of Lana is finally coming to other platforms. It's been on Xbox since the spring. It's coming to PlayStation and Switch this spring, this next spring. Heavenly Bodies is out on the Switch February 2024. It's a fun little physics space game.
Yeah.
Let's see. Urban Myth Dissolution Center is a neat looking game.
Mm-hmm.
That one, it's a mystery adventure game. That looks pretty neat. Joined forces with the psychic director of the Urban Myth Dissolution Center and solve a variety of cases involving cursed relics, rental properties with shady histories, and dimensional. So basically a bunch of weird shit, supernatural shit happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got like that kind of thing. And yeah, they ended saying like, hey, Braid Anniversary Edition is also coming to the Switch. Because they announced that a couple of weeks ago. It was just coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and PC on April 30th next year. I didn't put that news because Jonathan Blow sucks. Fuck him.
Yeah, seriously.
But yeah, we'll get to some better news here. Black Friday's coming up. This is a weird year for that because this stuff's been going on for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
As Black Friday just spreads out throughout the month of November.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. This list did not come from Cheap Ass Gamer. Came from Reset Era. That somebody managed to compile a lot of the stuff there. It has some of the digital stuff on PlayStation Network, but this might be the PlayStation Direct for physical stuff. If you want to go to the eShop and the PlayStation Store and Xbox stuff, look up DekuDeals.com. I'll probably put a list on that. A link to that on here. Nintendo stuff goes live on Monday. For that, but other games, there's some interesting stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been waiting on some of this stuff to go on sale, like Assassin's Creed Mirage would be $40 here at a bunch of places. For that, what else here? The Atari 50 collections, $20 at a bunch of places. Let's see, AW Fight Forever's $40. At some places. What else is here? Some of those indie physical games are going to be on sale. Crisis Core, $30. If you want that one, the Final Fantasy VII Reunion.
Mm-hmm.
For that, there's Dead Island 2 is $35. The Dead Space Remake is
$35.
Mm-hmm. At a couple of places here. You can get Diablo 4 for $50 at Best Buy, it looks like. $60 at Walmart if you want to pay more, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you want to do it. Disney Dreamlight Valley, $35.
Mm-hmm.
What else here? Elden Ring's $30.
Mm-hmm.
See on PS4 at Best Buy. You just get that and you get the PS5 version for free.
Mm-hmm.
Free upgrade there. So you can check that out. Let's see. Final Fantasy 16 for $40. Let's see. Fire Emblem. No, that's just Warriors 3 Hopes.
Mm-hmm.
That's $30. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, where's The Last of Us? I was going to see that because it's a $10 upgrade. So if you you can get that for $20 at Walmart. So you get that. Only pay $30. Essentially get the PS5 version.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad there. One that I particularly like, Yeah, Theorhythm Final Bar Line. You get it for $30, at least on the Switch. I don't know if there's other editions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you'll probably have better luck looking on the websites directly for some of this stuff because they don't always publicize which ones are all in their sales. As much as I've looked through like Best Buy for like movie stuff that they had on sale, it took me a while to figure out what I wanted. But Barbie, that movie is $10 for the Blu-ray edition. That's a very good price for that. It's one of the best movies I've seen this year. So that's out there. Yeah, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart for $30 at a couple of places there. That's worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's some good stuff. Check out the link here.
Mm-hmm.
The eShop and the PSN and the Xbox Store has some more stuff going on. Some of the companies didn't wait for Nintendo to do their thing. I think Activision Blizzard already put their stuff on sale.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out. But yeah, the Deku Deals kind of does a pretty good job of compiling all that stuff together, but
yeah,
may miss a few things, but you can check that stuff out. So yeah, there's going to be a lot going on here. I already got all my Blu-ray orders out for the week and some Christmas stuff done. So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like a lot of the Black Friday sales already started early. For me in particular with gaming, nothing really floated my boat. And like, I'm kind of kicking myself because a couple of weeks ago, or was it last week, Target did a buy two get one free sale. And a lot of the stuff there that Amazon matched was already on discounted price. And looking back at it, I should have just ordered and just returned if I saw some Diablo was like sub 45 from, I believe I saw Mortal Kombat for like around 50, but buy two get one sale. But anyway, I did get some stuff already, not related to gaming. I got movies, like you mentioned. I ended up getting Barbie. Then I bought two monitors, a mic, and a standing desk. So even though I won't be gaming with...
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. That's kind of going to do it for the week this week. We'll be back after the holidays.
Hopefully the poop coma is over by then.
Yeah. We should be pretty good for next week, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you to Brandon Denner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week as we are 1 week closer to December. Somehow this is the month that is both going really fast as Thanksgiving did not feel like it was going to be this week.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to next week and be wondering why November is already over.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll be a fun time as we get through the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers.
Yeah.
That are also weirded out by how fast we got from Halloween to Thanksgiving.
Seriously, it was like Halloween was over and the very next day, it happened so fast.
I've already seen people with their Christmas decorations up.
They started Christmas shit up the morning after Halloween at the grocery store I work at. So
I've seen Christmas stuff up in September.
We're going to come to a point where Halloween only lasts half a day.
Even then, for Halloween, like we didn't even get any trick-or-treaters. So, but which is fine. We don't really serve candy. But as far as Christmas starting early, I'm Filipino. We start in September.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you look, you can find that they've repackaged the Halloween candy as Christmas candy. Mm-hmm. The same packaging, just with like a Christmas gift design on it instead of whatever the snack thing they do for the Halloween candy. I'm like, man, you guys just want to keep producing the same things all year round. You found, I've seen Christmas trees that were black so you could put them up for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what the fuck? We don't need trees for every holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's your holiday rants for the week. Yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.